So if no one is talking, feel free to just unmute yourself. Otherwise, just raise your hand and we'll go in order. And then let's kick it off. So, Nicole,
My name is
yeah.
Paul Vermeule.
Go ahead, Merle.
What I'm asking, this is a question. I don't know if it's an aberration or if it happens all the time, but what I had was a PGP key that expired, and I replaced it with a new updated key, but I still didn't get the system, the routing to function right. I actually had to go down into the route and actually choose that key again in my routing. And I was wondering if that is the way it works, because in special routing, I would think, man, this could cause me a lot of problems, because if I changed a key out, I could have, you know, who knows how many subscriptions that were running under that route. But I was just curious if you have ever heard of that happening before, where you actually had to go back and choose the key again in your routing.
So you're using advanced routing, right?
Correct.
The key had exactly the same name like the old key?
Exactly. It was identical.
And when you selected the key, did you select it from the list or did you type the name? Well, you always type the name. It should have worked. So this doesn't make sense to me.
Originally, I chose it from the list, the dropdown. Once I gave it the partner name, I was able to choose that key. That was the only one available. Mm-hmm. But this would have been, that routing wasn't in place. And months down the road, the key expired and had to be renewed by the partner. They sent in the new key. We imported the new key. But the route still didn't work, and we kept getting an encryption error. But we eventually got down to the point of, hey, let's choose that key again, then it functioned correctly.
So this shouldn't have happened. So open a ticket with support and see what they'll say, because with the keys, it's based on the name of the alias of it when you select.
That's what it looks like. So, yeah. I mean, when it's identical, you would have thought to yourself, no, there's just no way that it can be that. But I appreciate the answer.
Yeah,
I have a question on this too.
Yeah, just a second. Give me a second. So one thing, make sure you don't have a small big letter change in the name of the key. You know, just cross your T's, make sure that it's exactly the same name. Because I had got caught once by that.
Annie, the way we do it, ours are always consistent. Always our partner name, uppercase. Then we have an underscore. CURR for current key underscore and PGP. It's always the same, because I'd rather be consistent and have somebody say, hey, you're wrong. I've done it consistently wrong, and then fix that. But it's always the same.
Okay. I fully understand, and that's the best way to do it. I was just putting it on the table. If you are absolutely sure it was the same one, check with support, because this shouldn't be behaving that way as far as I know, simply because with the keys, we're looking them up by name. So if it's doing it differently, there might be. So the only explanation is either that there is an ID hookup behind the scenes, maybe in the caches. Mm-hmm. So it might have been a cache problem, but check with support, see what's going on. Something weird is happening. I heard someone saying they have another question on the same topic. So,
well, actually, actually, it's the same on the same issue here. Would it made a difference if you replaced the key rather than deleted and then created a new one with the same name?
Can you do that with PGP? Yeah, you can. I don't know. As I said, in both scenarios, it should have worked the same way, because the key on the route only comes into play during the route execution itself. So I would expect that by replacing the key in any way or form, as long as the key is again there when the route triggers, that it should work.
Yeah, it makes sense. But just maybe for sure, when you create the ticket, explicitly say whether you deleted the key or replaced the key, because there's a nuance there.
Yep. I agree. And it can be, as I said, it might end up being just a caching issue. If we are caching the key inside of the route, then it's possible that the change of the key on the account itself was not recognized for a while until you said, hey, the route changed. So this might need the fixing. So I'm not sure if the problem was that the route was not seeing the new key as a new key, or if it was not seeing a key at all. See where I'm going with that? So,
yeah,
just check with support, see what they might say, and let's go to the bottom of it. It shouldn't be behaving that way in any way or form. I agree with you. It if this was going to behave like that, that's a lot of overhead on the admins to remember to go resave things. The whole point of hooking up by name was that as long as you name it properly, it will work, right? Plus, especially because those keys can come from different accounts in different situations, right? So check with them. My good feeling is that something got cached wrongly. Did you restart the servers between the change of the key and the resaving of the route?
No.
No. Yeah. I would have tried that as well. And if you have a dev environment, I would try that as well. If it is a cache issue, a restart will resolve it. At least you'll know it's a cache issue.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I have a couple of questions in the chat. How we monitor certificate expiration notifications in ST? I cannot pronounce your name. Vishnu? Das? How do you pronounce that name? Sorry for anyone that had been on this call before. I'm bad with names, so bear with me. Okay.
Yeah, no.
Can you hear? Okay, go ahead.
So actually, we saw one application in the ST that talks about monitoring the user expiration, locking, and disabling, and the PGP notifications.
Yep.
So we wanted to use only this application only to monitor the PGP keys or other kind of keys. So how we can do it? Can it be explicitly used for certificates only? And if yes, then what kind of certificates it will monitor?
So it will monitor all certificates inside of accounts. So if they're on the, so let me open it. Give me a second here. Account maintenance. So see, here is the section. You can just enable that one, specify how many days for the certificates. It will monitor anything that is under the account itself. If the certificate is on this, yeah, go ahead.
So it will monitor login certificates, PGP certificate, and the certificates
partner
created.
Certificates. Like for SSH servers and so on, yeah.
And how about the global certificate? Does it monitor those as well or no?
No, this is only for the accounts. So if you need to monitor the certificates over here on the setup menu, those you need to monitor on your own. We do not have a mechanism for them. No, none.
Okay. And another question. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. But inside of the accounts, all three tabs, you know, if you go to an account and you check all of the three tabs. Hey, I even have my account here yet. Yay. So over here, all of those, the login, the partner, the private, all of them are monitored, but you cannot pick and choose. If you turn it on, it will be available for, it will send you it will send a notification for all certificates here, anything expiring.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And it can. This application can be used explicitly for PGP keys, and we don't want to use it for accounts. Is it doable, right?
No. It can be used for all keys, but yes, it can be used for just the keys. If you cannot make it to work, just put the account notifications to something like 10,000 days or stupid, something stupid in the future like that. And then it will never work for accounts and then only for key. I think you should be able to set it up only for keys, but I've never done it personally. So in case it doesn't work, as I said, just, you know, make the account one somewhere in the far, far future and then the key on the short term and you're back in business.
Yeah, this is one thing. Another thing I have is sometimes what happens is the same PGP key certificate used under different accounts and routes by making it public. So is there any best way to find out where all this particular certificate is used?
So you know how I said about 5 minutes ago that when you change a certificate, because we reference by name, that's why it's so easy to find it. Yeah, you're in the opposite scenario, that because we're using it by name, if you're just using it by name, some kind of search might find it. But remember that we also have support for expression language over there. So it's possible that the key might be actually not even called by name, but by some kind of expression that extracts it out from a variable, for example. So unfortunately, the answer is nope. There is no easy way to find where it is used because we are referencing by name. If you don't use expression language in the PGP sections, the easiest way might be to actually do an XML export and then look for the name of the alias, you know, as old style as it might sound. But if you're using expression language, for example, and something like flow parameters or account parameters to specify which key to be used for a specific account, then unfortunately, you know, you won't even be able to find it.
Okay. And and I have one more query. Sometimes what happens is we share the PGP keys to the partner, but they don't use that key to encrypt the files. And they use some different keys and send back to us. At that time, we go back to them and we ask what key ID that you have used to encrypt the file. Then they share the key ID that we see in the certificate. Now, we want to find out which certificate is with that key ID in our Axway ST. So how we can find out that?
Just a second, there was a quick question in the chat. The application we showed was called Account Maintenance, Jeff. I saw the question and it's new in 5.5, new-ish. And it has a lot of nice things if you're not using it. So you have the ID and you're trying to figure out
what
which
alias
key that might be.
Correct. Yeah.
That will be complicated. Essentially, you'll need to read all of the keys and with the, can you even do that? I am not sure if you can even do it. I understand the use case. You're trying to chase down your key. I just don't know if you can do it with just the ID of the key. I've never needed to do that.
So anyway, you can for your future implementation to get this in REST APIs or so that we can have easy way.
Yeah, I'll take a note. One thing you might want to try is using the REST API, pull one of the keys that you know the ID of and see if the ID will show up somewhere on the parameters of the key itself. It should be somewhere. I don't know if you can search for it. So as long as it shows up in the IP itself, in the API, you should be able to just get a list of it, of all of them, and just look for it, as ugly as it might be. But I'm not sure if we can search by ID. Okay.
Yeah, I tried back, but I was not able to get that. That's where.
Yeah. Okay. I took a note. I'll play with it a little bit more in the afternoon. If I find something, mm-hmm. I'll let you know. But I don't think, okay. I know we couldn't in API 1.4. That part I can guarantee you. And in 2.0, when they did the new stuff, I don't think that this is one of the options for certificate scheme. But I'll try to check and at least to see if brute force might work, you know, grab all the keys and then cycle through them. It's, you know, even that I'm not sure how possible it will be. Also, keep in mind that as long as the key is in a position where the account can see it for the decryption, it should be okay. But indeed, it's very different, right? During the encryption, you specify the key, you know perfectly well which key is used. During the decryption, the file just arrives. So usually they encrypt with your keys. One trick might be to just put those keys out on the server tab, you know, on the certificates tab, and it'll connect the dots as you will find them. You know, if you put your decryption keys on the certificate menu over here, as opposed to inside of the accounts, the route will pick them up from there because these are your global certificates. But I don't know how many decryption keys you have and how many you had given out, right? If you're doing one-on-one, if you're generating a new pair for everyone, then that obviously doesn't work. So.
That.
Okay.
And one of the difficulties that we are facing is sometimes what happens is the partner server gets changed from earlier name to some different name, maybe cloud migration or other activities. And at that time, we find difficulties in finding out which all routes that particular transfer site is being used. I tried to go through API as well, but I was not able to get that. So,
go ahead, sorry.
So we wanted to know if there is any way, easy way to get that information from the routes.
Same problem. Remember then when you pick up a site, and why I keep stop sharing? Because you know what? I'll just keep the server on. Give me a second. Let me do some housekeeping here. So remember when you go on the route, inside of the step of the partner, you can either select a site, but you also can type an expression that will find the site on its own, right?
Yeah.
That's where your problem begins. If it was, again, if you always name your sites directly inside of the route, with API, you can probably do stuff, but you'll need to circle through all of them. The easiest way is actually do XML export of the routes and just look through them. But if you're using expressions, if you're putting things like, you know, the account name or whatever, you will never find it that way because it will connect. It will connect on during the execution only. But if you're just looking at the route, it will never connect. And that's where what is important is some naming conventions. But yeah, it's both the good and the bad thing in the routing elements, right? Because we're connecting by name, you can just build the route and just name things properly and they will work. The initial problem we started with notwithstanding. But it doesn't lend itself to actually finding where it's used, especially with expression language. Access?
Yeah, usage is fine, but we are getting difficulties in finding in which all places that transfer site is used under the routes, because we might have different routes. And since the account is made public, the transfer site will be available for any other accounts. Now, making a change would cause an issue, right? So in some cases, we might need to create a different transfer site and reattach under different routes. So in that case, we need to find out which all routes are being used for that transfer site. So manually, if we have hundreds of routes, then it's very difficult.
Yeah. Do you use expression language in the send to partner selection of the site, or do you just select the site name?
We just select the site.
Okay. If you just select the site, then my best advice it will be to use the XML export through the command line and just export the routes, not the not accounts, because there were too much. You can export everything, of course, and then just search, and it will tell you where the name is popping up. Of course, you can do that through the API as well, but because you need to go all the way down to the steps themselves, there won't be an easy way. It will be multiple steps. So with XML, it's the fastest. Plus, it will give you a number, and you will know when you didn't find all of them. And yes, it's clunky. And yes, we probably should have a better way. But again, because on Send to Partner, you can use expression language, it makes it extremely hard to get you anything back out. It's in your case, you're in a better shape. If you never use expression language, at least you can search for them. It sounds, you know what? Go to the ideas portal and specify an idea saying that you want a lookup screen where you can specify a site or a certificate, and it can tell you where S is configured to hard coded to use it. Let's say it like that. It will never catch the expression languages one, but it will catch your use case if they can build something like that.
Okay.
You know, that's the best I can tell. And in the meantime, don't forget you have the XML export. And I know the APIs are all the new and beautiful and so on, but old style always works, especially, you know, in your case. Make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Back to the chat. Jort, I don't know how to pronounce your name. Yes, because you increment the name. Yep, Jort, right? Okay.
Right.
Because you increment the name of the certificate or the key, it's a new ID, it's a new name, so you always need to go change it in the route. It cannot figure it out, right?
Right.
That's back to what we're talking about, the PGP keys. Our first correspondent just replaced with the same name. In your case, you change the name with the increment. And ST is not that intelligent. It doesn't know that it needs to look for the biggest number. So, yeah.
Right. Yeah, well, that's our policy to change the name so we reflect the current year and the month and day on there.
Okay.
So you can see it. So it's a minor inconvenience, but it would be nice if we could just automatically replace it somehow. You know.
But not an easy way.
So I went into the REST API for my ST production and looked up the certificates, and so you can actually pull it out with the API, but the ID, I'm not sure. I'm pulling it up by name, type, and issuer. Saying that that it's not stored by ID, or you can't look it up by ID?
I don't know off the top of my head. As I said, I'll play with it a little bit later. I know that there is no search mechanism for it, but if you do a get on the certificate and the certificate details, if the ID is there, obviously it will store it somewhere. I think we should be, we might be storing it somewhere. I just don't, okay. I don't think we can search by it and, you know, grab all 10,000 certificate to find one by ID. It just doesn't sound like a great use of your time.
No. So I do see the ID as a search in the query, and it does let you do it.
Okay.
I can't share my screen, but you know.
It's okay.
Put a screenshot in there. Okay.
I put it in a screenshot. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So you can actually filter by the specific ID number. Yeah.
See, one more problem solved. I do have another
question. Yeah, I had another question.
Thanks for looking it up. and then go with your question.
Okay, sure. You were speaking about the idea portal earlier, mm-hmm. and there's an idea that's gaining traction on there. It's ST-I-140. And it says no downtime when upgrading the ST cluster and Edge. You probably have seen that, right? And we were talking about that in the group that we were talking about upcoming product. So it's on the roadmap but there's some confusion that it's not just for the cloud, but it's for actually ST, and that's enterprise and maybe standards. So it's like, that's my question. I use ST standard and we don't really have any plans right now to upgrade to the cloud or to enterprise. So what are our options down the road, do you think?
None. We will never ever have a zero downtime for standard cluster. Or let me not say it never ever, but it's not on the roadmap. No one is talking about it. The model itself doesn't allow it. So short of us rewriting the standard cluster in the near future, you're not going to get anything to help you with that. Sorry.
Okay. So the only option would be upgrading to either enterprise. Would it be available for that? Or is it only going to be available in cloud?
So the first will be for cloud only, because we need a patient zero. The plan, as far as I know, is to try to make it for any enterprise cluster. How it will work and what it will require, they don't have the details yet. So stand by on that. There will be more news as the year is rolling. But that's one of the main big topics we had been talking about internally. Zero downtimes and eliminating the downtimes on upgrades, especially with our patching now every month and so on. So standby is the best I can say. It's way too early. They are still working out the kinks. The part that we had been taught is that there will be nothing for standard cluster. And it kind of makes sense with these replicating databases. It just almost doesn't have a technological way. And I don't know yet, even in enterprise cluster, will it be doable just with the cluster, or if you will need additional software or hardware around it to support it. So,
well, that might be a justification for us internally, having a discussion about whether we want to upgrade to at least enterprise if it's available for there or to cloud. So,
and enterprise cluster is not only just bigger than the standard cluster, it gives you a lot of other things, including the servers come back on their own without you needing to be up at 3 a.m. in the morning to sync them in. So,
that's attractive.
Mm-hmm. And this is already there, right? This is how that's one of the main things. And so if you're looking for these days I think of the standard cluster almost as a starter mode. It works, but the moment when your business is critical and you don't want to have someone 24/7 on call for this cluster, going to enterprise actually makes a lot of sense. I mean, someone kicks the cable in your lap tomorrow and someone needs to be up to resync the clusters.
Right. So. Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about. So maybe this is a better topic for Nicole, but perhaps somebody should go out and update that idea and just kind of like set the record straight, because there's a lot of, it's like I've got three notices today that idea has been, had different questions and people are expressing confusion. I like the platform change where it is actually, if you vote on an idea, it will, give you all of the status updates whenever somebody adds a comment to it. But I think that's something that, customer service wise, that could be, set the record straight. Plus in the roadmap, it should be designated as like, okay, we're going to do this for cloud and then for enterprise or whatever. So it kind of gets, people, focused on it to where there's less confusion. That's just an idea. Maybe I should put that in the idea portal.
Part of it is that it's so new at the moment that some of the things might change by the time they hit out of the door. You know, it's technology. Yeah. If it turns out something is easier, they might pivot in a different direction. I think that's part of what's going on. The last I heard was cloud first, then enterprise clusters. But, you know, ask me again next week. That might have changed. And it's might change. Map. So for like things like this, of course.
Wait 5 minutes and it'll be different.
Absolutely. And because it's a roadmap, I cannot promise anything. You know, I'm implementation. And in the meantime, I'm seeing that Joe, thank for that, put the thing, and he made, I was wrong. It was there in 1.4 and I forgotten about that. So.
You're welcome, Annie.
You know, I don't know everything. I forget things. That's why we have those meetings. It's all about the I promise I didn't set it up so that people can help. I really didn't remember. It's early in the morning here.
Does breaking the cluster for a standard cluster kind of count as zero downtime? Is that recommended?
Yes and no. It is a zero downtime in a way, or at least lower downtime, but you're still down while you're breaking the cluster. And all the transfers that end up on one side of the cluster, you know, you can only do one-way sync. So if you have two sides, two legs working at the same time, even for a minute with a single file, whatever goes through the one that will get overwritten, you will never be able to resubmit that file. The tracking table never gets merged again.
We're trying that right now, so I'll let you know.
Yep. And I've done that a few times in the past, especially before Enterprise Cluster even existed. It works, but you just need to realize that you strand stuff. So if someone locks in, so if you split into leg one, leg two, and leg one is your production, and you start working on leg two, at one point you'll need to resync either from leg one to leg two or vice versa, you know, that will overwrite everything. So everything that happened onto the side that got overwritten will disappear. That means login times, change passwords, any transfers that went through that leg, they would have happened, you know, the files made it, but you don't have a record of them anymore.
Sure, thanks.
Okay. I see a couple of raised hand. Vishnu. Sorry. That's you again. Vishnu.
Yeah. So right now, we are facing one more issue very frequently. One of the cluster nodes is going offline, and the sync is not happening between these two. So how this cluster...
Are you standard or enterprise? Are you standard or enterprise?
There's a bit of an echo and some background noise. So if you're not speaking with Annie, can you make sure to unmute yourself, please? Otherwise, I'll do that for you.
Okay. So, sorry, Vishnu, are you enterprise or standard?
Enterprise cluster.
Okay. So, and there is no syncing in enterprise cluster. As soon as the server comes up, it connects to the same database and it should be up and running. So,
no. What we have observed is when we, let's say, when this one of the node is offline and we create a site or some changes in one of the node, ideally, our expectation is they should be replicated on the other node immediately. So sometimes either we are seeing lots of delay, or sometimes they are not visible on the other node. That is one thing. And second thing is how what could be the reason and how to go to pinpoint the issue in such cases.
Yeah, your issues are caches, and that might explain also what you were talking about earlier. Basically, the two servers in an enterprise cluster talk to the same database. Literally, they go to the same place. However, each of them has a local cache. And if this local cache is not updated, it's possible that you have a big latency towards your database and the server is trying to compensate. It's possible that you have a misconfigured caches in your, if you you haven't configured your caches properly, so the address server doesn't get the cache properly. So if this is happening, get support on the phone and get them to look through your configuration. Because so enterprise clusters should be instantaneous. Whatever you see on server one, you should be seeing on server two immediately. As in, I press the button, say, if you go to the other server, it's already there. Because in standard cluster, there are two separate databases. They need to be synced and things go wrong occasionally. Just ask people using standard cluster. With enterprise cluster, literally, it's a single database behind them. Right?
Okay. Yeah.
So if you have a node that doesn't pick up immediately, get support to start looking at this configuration. You have something somewhere that is blocking the caching from building properly.
Do we have any supporting document around this to check it? Or we need to raise directly a support case and ask them to provide a help on this?
Get support to look into that. We have some, so if you look at the capacity guide, there is some explanations of some configurations, but usually ST on its own, if you didn't change the configuration of the caches, should not be doing what you're seeing. Something is happening in your environment. They need to figure out what's going on. It's possible that there is a someone changed the timeout setting that they shouldn't have. Or there might be, as I said, latency to the database that might be causing issues, or it might be something in the kernel. I haven't heard that kind of a problem with enterprise cluster in years. Let's say it like that. Yeah, it shouldn't be doing that. Mm-hmm.
And note, we just upgraded to the latest version of 5.5. Mm-hmm. And before, it was working perfectly fine, and this issue was not observed at all. And this is popped up after the upgrade.
Yeah. Okay, and this is important. Put that into your ticket and get support to look into that. This is a caching issue, right?
Oh, yeah.
That part, and especially if your PGP problem was happening around the same time, guess what? It's the same problem.
Okay. And so, another thing surrounding this, how the cluster status is monitored, like when it says that one of the node is offline, who decides that and how this happens internally?
So there is an internal port between the cluster nodes, 8005, something like that. It's to the coherence model itself. You know, we have coherence on between, so on ST itself, we have the coherence library. Used to be the Oracle, now it's the open one. What it does is basically pinging the servers. It's looking for this port. And if the port is not responding, if you have a latency problem, if it times out, it says, oh, I cannot find my friend anymore. So it switches it off. So it marks it as offline. If that is happening, you have networking issues.
Yeah, and surprisingly, even after upgrade, it worked for a few months without any issues. Such kind of issues were not reported or found, but it just popped up since last 3 or 4 months, and there were no changes at the database or the network level that we were aware of.
Are you sure? Yeah, and that you are aware, but check with your teams. It might be a DNS change. ST is very DNS prone to troubles. If the DNS changes around it and you don't restart ST, ST can get a little grumpy. So check, something changed. It might be our build, but it might be something in the environment. But if you're having a server getting lost, and if you're having this severe cache issues, my gut feeling is you have a latency problem or DNS problem in this environment somewhere. Also, and it's important, make sure the clocks are actually pointing to the same time on both servers. If they run out of sync time-wise, you know, if you're on Linux and you are not using NTP or something like that, you're in a lot of trouble. But make sure that they don't, if your clocks are not synced properly, the cluster gets a little sidewise because it really doesn't know what's going on. So that also might explain this kind of delays, because, for example, you updated something at 9 a.m., but the other server thinks it's still 8:59. Guess what?
Yeah, got it. What you were trying to
say. Makes sense? So, okay.
And last question to this. Assuming, let's say, we land into a situation where one of the node is an offline state. Mm-hmm. So how the transfers are still expected to happen from the both the nodes or only one?
Well, and that's where the biggest problem is. Mm-hmm. Depending on why the other server thinks it's offline, it still might be possible that this server might still be processing, but it might not have the latest configuration. That's why you need to go to the bottom of it. Each server individually decides what jobs to run. So just because one of the cluster nodes says, I don't see my partner, does not necessarily mean that the partner is actually not properly connected and working. But this is the most dangerous time, because it's possible that both of them are running with different caches. And in this case, depending on where the transfer lands, it might behave differently. So get to the bottom of what you're saying. It sounds more and more like something in your environment had gone a little higher.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Merle, sorry about that. Your turn, and then I'll go back to the chat because I know I have questions there. So go ahead.
What I was wondering is there anything on the horizon for secure transport to allow the exporting, importing of routes?
Of what? Oh, routes.
Yeah.
We had been asking. We don't have an answer yet. Not that I know of.
Okay. I mean, it was just a question. I mean, it would be nice to be able to, you know, the thing we talked the last time, Annie, about this right here, but, you know, when you export, import a partner, it would really be great to be able to do one. You know, it's like you figure out to yourself, hey, I'm going to have 30 subscriptions for this partner. And guess what? Only 10 of them are going on into production right now, right? I can't export the other 20 later on down the road and import them into production. I have to build them out manually because it doesn't allow for that. Or I have to drop everything I've got and then re-import it again. I mean, I'm sure you've heard of that before.
Yes, and your third option is to use the API, but it can be very clunky, especially if the route itself is inside of the account. Yep. You know, it's multiple steps, but as of right now, I haven't heard anything. This is the old conversation about promotion. How do we move partial accounts from one place to another and how we reconcile partial accounts? Because if we're talking about the full account, export the account, import on the other side, business done, right?
Yeah,
but if you go down to the nitty-gritty of, I just want these 5 subscriptions together with their 5 keys and their 3 routes and a route template, that's not that easy. Simply because of the way the XML import-export works. And the API, so you're kind of sort of in the middle of it. So with the XML, it's full accounts only. With the API, is object by object. You cannot say, give me the... you know, all 7 objects. Now, will we have a middle ground one day? We're hoping. But there haven't been anything yet on the roadmap. And I'll ask again, you know, I keep asking, but it's the promotion conversation. Unfortunately, we're nowhere near ready for it yet.
Thank you.
Okay. Back to the chat. I don't know who asked that, but so for AR notification, is there a way for successful route notification to be filtered by direction? What do you mean by direction? If it is a successful notification, it's only for pushes. The pulls are on a different place. So what's the question exactly? What am I missing?
Hey, Annie, this is Maurita from FDB. So we have this route where we unzip the file and we have to publish it back from the STFS going back to the customer folder for it to be handled by another simple route in there. And with that one, we noticed that the customer received multiple notifications for all the transfer that were flagged as route on the protocol. And this is for both inbound and outbound transfer. So I was wondering if there's any way that if it's successful, I just want it to be sent if it's just an inbound, routing.
Yeah, I know what you mean. You basically are republishing back in the same account.
Yes.
So technically your outbound becomes an inbound again.
Yes.
And it goes to the same folder?
Yes.
Okay, one thing to check. Look at session.protocol, I think will be the variable. Look at the protocol. One of those things will have the protocol set as whatever they used for the upload, like HTTP or SSH. The other one will have the word routing on it. So this will be your differentiation. So on the condition of the route, I think it will be under session.protocol. If it's not there, look at the documentation, but find the protocol. I think that will be your easiest way and kick out the ones that are routing. That will mean that you only get notification on the first upload.
So with
make sense?
Yes, but in terms of setting it up, how do you apply that? How do you apply that filter?
When you create the route over here. Come on, move. Yeah, my server is sleeping. No, it's not. So when you over here, where you have the route condition. Session. Hey, it's helping me. Like that. If session protocol and you probably want EQL, HTTP or SSH or route or whatever, or not. Probably do something like not session protocol, routing, and then it will not even go into the route. And if it's not into the route, it will not send the notifications, right? So you might need to build two separate routes. One, what to happen with the file if it's the initial route, the initial upload, and one, what to happen with the routing one. Whatever you want to do. And then make sure you actually use the notifications on the routing itself, on the route and not on the package. Because if they're out on the package, any route will kick in, so that won't help you. But if you use notifications here, as opposed to the one outside on the template, on the package, you know, because you have two spaces, that will do the trick.
So, okay, so with this one, I'm a bit lost on this one. So if I filtered what goes into this route based on the protocol, but I still have some steps that needs to be done with that file.
You will need to have two separate routes. One of them running on the upload when it's not routing. That will do all your routing, whatever needs to happen, and send the notifications if this is where you want them. And one running when the file arrives out from a routing that does other things but doesn't send notifications.
I see what you mean.
You know, okay, split the route. And I know that this will mean repeating the route twice, but at least it will give you the control.
Yes.
So, yeah, that's the cleanest way I can think of. Just split it by the protocol. And look at everything else under session. This gives you where the file came from. There might be other variables that will help you. But basically, play with that. Play with the parameters. And that's the generic way to do it, right? Anytime you need to find the condition. In this case, because the file is arriving from two different places, from different protocols, it basically the easiest possible way.
So. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Beautiful. One sorted out. What's next? Best practices for patching production DR environment. Michael, you're going with the hard questions today, aren't you? So are you enterprise cluster or are you standard cluster?
Hey, Annie. Good morning. Yeah, we're enterprise cluster.
yay, and nay. So the way to do it is step one, break the connection between the two clusters, the database connection, so that the two databases are living alone. Now, are you on MS SQL, Oracle, or Postgre?
We are neither. We're on Oracle.
Good. At least Oracle can be split, because if your MS SQL is always on, that thing is a little weird. Yeah. So the official line with production DR environments is that the step number one is got your GBA to sever the connection between the two databases, at which point you basically to have absolutely independent clusters. Leave one of them in production so people can play with that and go upgrade the other one. And this is where something I said earlier about standard router will come to bite you as well. Because at one point, when both legs, you know, both the DR and the prod are already upgraded, you'll need to connect the databases again, at which point you decide which leg loses all its information and gets overwritten. So
my question, like I understand about breaking the databases and stuff like that, I think ultimately my real question in this is that does it have to remain broken until both prod and DR are upgraded to its new version, or can the DBA create his snapshot standby, we upgrade DR, revert snapshot standby after DR is down, revert it back to what it is, then go on and proceed with production. That way it's communicating. Well, so my DBA is having the argument that it shouldn't matter if we're reverting the DR database.
Okay.
Understood. Well, he's not understanding why it has to stay broken, essentially, is what I'm getting at.
So here is the easiest explanation, the easiest way to explain it. Because we're working with essentially exact replica of the database, as if you come, if your production is on, say, the January release, and your DR is already on the February release, when you connect them, you will override the database either, and now the database will be either the January release database or the February release database. The other guys don't know what they're doing with that. That's your problem. That's why it needs to be split, because the databases will be different. And how different? In some versions, it doesn't make a difference much, so they won't even care. In some cases, the other thing might not even work.
Okay, so because he was saying that, you know, we're not even updating the binaries on the databases, so it shouldn't matter.
No, but we update the data and sometimes the structure of the data, but also some of the fields. So what might happen is that if you have the January one and working against the February, there might be a field missing or some values or a new index or something. Or if you have the February working against the January working against the newer database, it might not know what to write somewhere. So you might corrupt an account by trying to save it because, you know, there is now a new field that is filled weirdly. So that's your problem. It's not the database itself. The database is okay. The problem is that the data inside is for the specific update. So, and your biggest risk is actually data corruption. I wouldn't care if you just cannot see something or, you know, but the problem is that if you save from the wrong side, it might either overwrite in the wrong way, so now nothing is working, or it might not fill a specific field that now is mandatory because the binaries of ST don't know about it. Makes sense?
That would still be the case even though he reverted the DR database back to its original previous state. I know that's an extra step that he's taking.
Okay, and this is why I said I started explaining why we cannot do it. If he is reverting back, so if you're, so let's talk about numbers. So if production is on build one and DR is on build two, and you upgraded DR, you tested it, it looks okay. If he shuts down all the DR servers and revert the DR database to what it was still for build one, he can connect them at that point, but you cannot start DR at all until the database gets swapped back.
Oh.
If you cannot start a server against a database that belongs to a different build, that's the important part.
But so, even if it's replicating from prod?
If it's replicated from, so if prod get upgraded in the meantime, it becomes on two and it gets replicated as two and now it's again built two, now you can start the DRs.
Okay. So just okay, so his idea is correct. It's just I wasn't fully understanding it.
Yeah, but I have a stupid question about that. I mean, this will mean that you will be fully down until production is fully upgraded.
It the DR is down anyway.
Okay. In this case, yeah, that will work. In this case, that will work as a charm. I mean, and quite honestly, you can even do some tricks that don't even require the database to go down, you know, but that will be a little bit more complicated and not as supported, so do it that way. But yes, his idea will work, and that's why I went into explaining how it works. What you want to make sure is that if the server is, if the ST is on version X, the database is on version, the database it talks to when it starts is on version X as well. Okay. Other from that, how you achieve that, do you do a snapshot? Now, one thing to be careful with the snapshot, although I don't think you have that problem because you won't be starting DR after you reswap back, but and you know, everything that you did in this upgraded database in DR will just get lost, but as you just use it for a quick upgrade, no one cares. So you're fine, you will be down for prolonged time. Usually with DR, what I'm seeing is something little different, you know. Use the DR temporary as production until the other server is getting worked on.
Yeah, no, we do have that downtime scheduled, so it's already known.
Okay, in this case, his idea will work as long as your OS team ensures that those upgraded servers don't try to go against this database. That's all you need to make sure, which means, by the way, and I keep telling people that your first step during an upgrade will be to make sure that those servers never ever start automatically until you're done with the upgrading process. You know, go and kick it out from the system or wherever you, however you're doing your automatic, because if your server gets rebooted and this ST starts again the database, it's possible to curb things because it will be the wrong database for a while.
Yeah.
So that's the only thing you need to be careful about. Other from that, if he reverts back to the old database, who cares? It's connected.
Right. And then, when we do prod, it would replicate to the newer version. Yeah. Okay.
Perfect. Yes and no.
Well, yes and no. I mean, it would replicate from, you know, what is so currently in production to the DR. Yeah.
Yeah. And here is where he need to be careful. It will not replicate database structure changes or anything that the upgrade process does itself. So he will need to, it will work, but the problem is that he will actually sooner or later need to reswap back with the temporary database that got upgraded on the DR side anyway. Because otherwise, the upgrade of the production will not fully upgrade the database on the other side. You still need to run through that as well. So I don't think that it will buy you as much as he thinks it will buy him.
So the better practice on this is just to keep them broken until both environments. Okay.
Yeah, that's the cleanest way. especially if you never have users coming into DR, because otherwise you might, so if we will update it, but the upgrader itself, let me think, what it will not do, let me work in my head through that. So there are two types of information. The global one will get replicated. The locals are the same because your IDs are matching in DR. So in theory, that database should be okay on the other side. And here is where in theory goes. I don't know if it's ever tested that way. So that's the best I can say about that.
Okay.
Plus, there is another reason I like to keep them separate, and this is if something gets screwed up, you have a live database to swing from, because the two databases are the same at this point. Mm-hmm. So if you upgrade your DR and it looks okay, now you have a database there that basically is the production database, right? Because it was fully synced before you started. So right. If something goes wrong during the production, if the database gets corrupted, if someone does something stupid, you don't need the DBA to recover back from an older build, and you can actually work against the other database if needed. You can use the DR temporarily as your pattern or it. If something looks weird but the servers are upgraded, you can always swing from the other database. I don't know. If you keep them connected during the process, if something goes wrong, you basically screwed up every single entity you have.
Yeah, no, they will not be connected. Like he was explaining that he was moving it from standby to a snapshot standby in order for us to upgrade DR, and then reverting it back to standby after we were done.
Yep, that's pretty much what he needs to do.
Yeah, that way we would keep the production at the current level intact.
Mm-hmm.
Because I mean, we're doing it one day to the next. You know, we're doing DR day one, and then we're doing prod day two. Like, I've already put this in test. It's been in test for 3 weeks. You know, we're okay.
Yeah, just keep the connection between the two of them down during the night between the 2 days, is what I'll say. Just keep them separate. The DR, keep the DR down. It's database not replicating. Worst case scenario, you will lose whatever happens on the production between when you disconnected them and between when you disconnected and when you go back to connected mode. That's your window. So for that one, what I would say, before you go into the downtime for the production itself, do an export of the tracking table and everything else out before you start, because it's for the last day or so. So if you disconnected Saturday at lunchtime, for example, and you start the work on production on Sunday at lunchtime, export the tracking table and server logs between Saturday and Sunday, because this is not on your replica database.
Okay.
So if something goes wrong, at least you have the export. It won't be in the database. It won't be resubmittable, but at least you have the records. Because if something goes wrong and you need to resync it the other direction, you'll lose all of that.
Right. Yeah, it wouldn't work. Right. Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, just, and it is just a precaution. But crap happens, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's software. Anytime you don't plan for something, it will happen. So I tend to tell people, get as many backups if you can, and if you think you have a backup, just do another one just in case, because the one time you don't, you'll need it.
Yeah, that's the time we'll need it. Yeah, and that's our plan. You know, we're going to do VM snapshots of the environment before we apply update, and then right after we apply update.
Yeah,
and then
we'll just when you do the snapshots, don't forget to make sure that SD is completely down.
Is down? Yes, correct.
PSEF, grep, make sure everyone is dead. If needed, go kill it. But make sure it's completely down so that you have a viable one. Because your enterprise cluster, you're actually in a better shape. Because even if you don't do that, there isn't much you can corrupt. You don't have a live database. But that's the other thing. while you're doing those snapshots, get them to do the snapshot of the database at that point.
They are. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
Good. And then do another backup just in case. And do XML export. Just in case everything shuts down, as you know, with an XML and system export, you can recover the environment very fast. So don't forget to do that as well before stopping the server.
Okay.
Just, awesome. You know. Yep. Okay, good. Okay, another question. How can you stop in-progress transfer? Is this a server-initiated or is that a client-initiated transfer?
Hey, Annie. It is server-initiated.
Oh, dear. Not much you can do short of calling your firewall people and telling them to kill it.
Oh, what if I told you that is not what's going on? It's not a network issue.
I'm not saying it's a networking issue. What I'm saying is that with server-initiated transfers, when they start, there is literally no way to stop them.
Okay. It's a very odd problem and it may be a situation that I should be addressing with support, but the system that ST is trying to pull the files from is actually up and you can pull the files manually, but there are a large number of queued transfers that are just seemingly stuck.
That I might be able to help you. So, okay, what version of ST are you on?
5.5, latest patch level.
Which patch level?
It's 126.
What month is that? I don't remember numbers anymore.
26th of January.
Oh, the January. Yeah, I might be able to help with that. Let me get to the API page. We have a new API in the newer STS, which is for the event queue. It's not on the UI. It's only on the API, on the events. What you can get is do get here, and what it will get you will be what events are in the event queue at the moment. You know, the good old event queue, where everything is stuck. If that event is actually in the event queue, you will see here that you literally can delete it.
Oh, that is amazing.
Yeah, we just added it a couple of versions ago. That's why I asked. So what it allows you is to manipulate the event queue. So if you have some idiot that put 10,000 files on his server without telling you, and now I still stuck trying to pull them, you can come through the API and actually delete those out from the event queue and clear your event queue. Very careful, because delete is a delete. If you swap it, it will never happen. Now, if because you're saying that the TM restart doesn't solve it, that tells me that those transfers are actually in the event queue. So look through the list with the event queue. It's not very easy to read sometimes, but who cares? You know, do your homework there. It's API only. There is no other way to get to that. It's API 2.0 only. There is no UI for that. There is no admin UI. I don't think they plan on one. But through the API, get the list, find those, and just kill them, and that might clear it. Now, why they're not transferring, that's a different conversation. You know, chase it with support. But when they get stuck that way, try to clear them first. Back in the days, the only way for us to do that was to go to the database, and we all know what disaster might have caused. So that's the new way to do it.
Okay. Thank you very much. That is so helpful.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, isn't there a new global setting that you can do that to keep the event queue clear for in-progress transfers?
There is, but you really have normal in-progress. So from what it sounded like in this use case, he just has stuck events that keep coming up when he restarts. And the
Yeah, go ahead. I thought the purpose of that is to when there's events that get stuck for a long period of time, this global setting will help it to time out, and it'll and SD will do some cleanup on that.
It can, but it will require a restart. It will require actually what's up if you have a really long translate that actually is going. So the event monitor will help you figure out what's going on first.
Yeah, and that's the concern, is that it's a very, very busy ST with a lot of big files going in and out. And yeah, we're loath to do anything that's going to impact anybody else who's using the system. So.
Oh, well, thank you. You know, I don't have that, that quite that issue, but we did enable that. But our, we don't send terabytes worth of files or receive them usually. So.
Do you have the name of the Joshua? Do you have the name of the property on your fingertips?
George who was referring to the config option.
Sorry,
I don't. George. I'm not familiar. No, I'm not familiar.
Sorry
with
about
it.
That, George. Do you no have words. The name of the property?
Not off the
I
top
know,
of my head.
I know which one you're talking about. I just don't remember what it was.
Yeah, it's a relatively new one. I think it was.
Yeah, that's the January server, and I think it was already there in January. But yes, it can help, but. Between so both of those changes, both this new property and the event monitor that I showed you, both of them were added for the same reason. Because in the past, once something kicked into the event queue, it was basically there forever, unless you touch the database, and we really don't like people doing that. Now, between the two of them, you actually have a better control of what's going on. Clicking on the transfer, maybe. Okay.
Is it max retry count? Because I think the other issue that we have here, event queue.max retry count, they're advanced routes. So there's, I know, some limitations on what can be done with those as well. I don't want to derail the conversation for too long.
Yeah, that's a different conversation altogether. But also don't forget that the event retry count, it has nothing to do with the file transfer retry count. It okay. basically is the internal. So the event retry count is saying if something goes wrong during the event, it can be any event, not just a transfer. It can be a delete event or it can be a login event. If something goes wrong, how many times more to pull it out from the database before saying, you know what, I really cannot do that. This is for cluster disruptions when the cluster node doesn't return it fast enough so that the coherence or the old model decides, you know what, this event is dead. Someone else needs to catch it. It's when you restart the server so the event goes into retry, stuff like that. So it's different. It always this property had always been there. It's our internal way to know when to give up on things. Because we always retry things.
Thank you.
Let me see. I don't have anything in the chat. We're almost on the half hour, but any last questions? Anyone else that have anything? And I don't think I have. Nope, no other questions. So anyone else? 5 minutes. Last call for questions. Nope. Okay, before I get it back to Nicole, if you are in the Phoenix area or the Scottsdale area, we will have in-person user group in a couple of weeks. So come talk to me then. And I hope to see all of you on the summit. And okay, last call. Questions, anyone? Probably I should stop sharing.
Thanks, Annie.
Okay. That was a good session. I like it when people help, and you know, when I don't know and I don't remember, someone else does. So back to Nicole.
Thank you, Annie, and thank you for this great session again, and thank you all of you for your time and discussions and participation. As Annie said, I hope that we will see you at Summit. You will see that there is a cost for the summit, but it's a very reasonable cost that includes all the meals, the hotel for two nights in Europe, and for two or three nights for the US. The price for the summit in Europe is 300 euros for the gala, the entertainment, of course, for all the great presentation. There will be customers speaking. There will be use case presented by the PSO teams with customers sometimes. But yeah, I'm very excited to have those summit again. So 23 to 25 in Europe at, in Brussels, and 13 to 15 of June in Arizona in Scottsdale. As I mentioned, you will be receiving an email that will lead to an article on the community where you will have the PDF of the slides that I have been sharing. So you'll have the link to register there. So yeah, I hope we will be able to meet again. I won't join the one in Scottsdale, but I will be there in Brussels. So with that, I hope we will see you, so either during Summit or at least in our next user groups. With that, I wish you all a good end of your day and see you soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Nicole. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Nicole. Thanks, Annie.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone. Have a wonderful day.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thank you.